Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Springboard, the iOS podcast for beginners and newcomers. Today's guest is Justin Miller of Mapbox, a prolific contributor to the open source community. Thank you and welcome on the show.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So I thought we'd get started off as we normally do with the discussion of how you got started with iOS and maybe Cocoa or Cocoa Touch.
Yeah, sure. Well, I got started with Cocoa in general in about 2004. So I think I was on like 10.3 or 10.4. And I just been interested in, I had Macs for a while then, and I finally got my head around Cocoa stuff. And so when the iPhone came around, I'd already had some experience doing Cocoa, a couple of years actually. And at first I was kind of, I don't know, I wasn't skeptical, but I didn't buy an iPhone 1. I just kind of wanted to see what was going on because I knew Cocoa wasn't available right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after the SDK came around, I did get one and started getting into it a little more, in like 2008, I guess it was.
Cool. So you got into it around 2008. That seems to be a common theme. You kind of had a Mac and just sort of picked up Cocoa, just because it was something that was available.
Yeah, I had I've been programming mostly in scripting type of languages since the 90s. So like I started with Perl and then moved into PHP, and I didn't have a formal computer science background, so I didn't really have any experience in C or C++ or any low level compiled type languages. And I switched to a Mac. I got as of OS 10, so I got a Mac in 2002. And pretty shortly afterwards, I just liked what I saw as far as the development tools and kind of wanted to learn more. And for whatever reason, Cocoa really clicked with me. And it was kind of my entry into low-level languages and the types of stuff where you've got header files and compiling and all that kind of stuff. And from there, I kind of learned C, but it really came via Cocoa first. It really kind of made sense for me.
So you don't think you need a background in something like C or C++ in order to dive into Objective-C and Cocoa or Cocoa Touch?
I don't think so. I could definitely see it being useful because, of course, Objective-C is more or less, it's written in C, but you've got the different syntax and the idea of it being object-oriented. So I suppose some C++ experience could be useful there, although I kind of came into it from a PHP object-oriented angle. So I'm sure it could definitely benefit you, but particularly, I guess, when you get into, just raw performance types of stuff. If you know how to drop down and do it in C, you could probably get things done a lot faster. But honestly, most things like that, it's kind of premature to think about optimizing those early on. And so I've always found the elegance of using Cocoa frameworks, like say using an NS array instead of an actual C array, to be more elegant and expressive and easier to program and understand later.
Mm-hmm. I like to think of it as like you're writing code so that other people can read it. Like it's going to be compiled, sure, and that's for the computer. But I mean, if it's not easy to read for a person, then it's not as useful to you as it could be.
Yeah, and to take that like a step further, I always think of more often than not that future person probably being myself, and any time after about even 3 months, but like 6 months later, you look back and you're like, who wrote this? Why? I don't have any memory of this. I don't know what I was thinking or what was in my head. So I think as the years have gone on, I've really kind of had an eye towards writing for future me so that I can stumble on this and really get a sense of what problem I was trying to solve, how the code works. I try to avoid being clever and just make it simple and straightforward. Mm-hmm. And it matters less when you're just starting out. Like I look back on some of my early code and it's pretty bad. But I don't know what I was thinking because I was probably thinking the wrong kinds of things. But it doesn't matter because it helped me learn the code and get it going and stuff still worked. And so, don't get too bogged down with that. But once you start getting better at it, it's important to think about maintainability as much as you think about it working and being bug free.
And that goes for like, not just C based stuff, but also some of the lower level toll free bridged data types like CF array ref and things like that. Like those are still C, Objective-C kind of like they're lower level, and you should only really use them if you have to because of a performance issue. And I've seen some people around the internet, you know, sort of debating that lately, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, no, use NSArray unless you, you know, have good reason to.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. I mean, there's certain frameworks. I'm trying to think. No. Well, I guess like something like Keychain, you know, it's still not a pure Cocoa yeah. framework still for some reason. I don't know. But, you know, there might be a valid reason to go from something like NSURL connection and kind of the higher level URL mm-hmm. fetching stuff down to CF network, and then you need to use them. But yeah, I agree. I'd say stick to the higher stuff, and it's just easier to not make mistakes with, really.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So what were some of the things that that you found to be helpful when you were starting out?
Yeah, so as far as, I guess the first thing that kind of comes to mind is trying to find an app idea that I could, you know, bite a piece off of. So for me, that was, it was a scratch your own itch kind of application. And so my first real Cocoa app, that I was doing anything with was for the place I was working at the time. We needed better backup systems.
Okay.
And so I started working on just a little tool to kind of wrap some command line things for that. And so that ended up didn't really go anywhere. Like, we used it a bit inside the company, but it didn't turn into an app that I did anything with externally. But it really helped me get going because I had a clear need for, like, I had a user, like a defined user, myself included. And it helped me think about what, you know, what that would make the UI of the application look like, or what tasks you'd need to do. And then from there, I could just start learning the bits and pieces. I remember spending a lot of time learning NS table view on the Mac because I needed to present things in a table view. And so, yeah, just having a clear app functionality really helped me get started. As far as the actual nitty gritty of the code kind of stuff, in those days, it was pretty much straight Apple's Xcode documentation for the classes. Blog posts when I could find it, but this is like 2004. There weren't a lot of blog posts about code level kind of stuff, and there weren't things like Stack Overflow and a lot of the things you have nowadays. But I've always found Apple's documentation to be really good, especially coming from open source projects where the documentation could be hit or miss. But something that did take me a while to learn that I wish I had known earlier was actually reading header files. And Xcode makes that really easy nowadays, because if you're in a piece of code and there's a class name, you can command click on it and it'll take you to its definition in a header file. And that's been useful for me because sometimes it states what's in the documentation in a different way. Or in certain cases, even it'll say things that aren't in the documentation that can help shed some light on things. And so I found opening header files and kind of poking around the classes that I was using helped me understand things a little better.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So definitely check out the header files. I mean, for things like UI table view and probably NS table view as well, when I first started, I would just read through all the different possible methods to learn what I could do. And that really helped help me learn, you know, how to use table views.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was nice. I like the practice of in Apple's documentation and a lot of other projects that follow the style of grouping methods by task. You'll see that when you browse. If you browse up in the little bar at the very top of the documentation window, you can browse properties, you can browse instance methods and class methods and that sort of thing. But you can also browse by task, and they'll list things like in a table view, like you know, managing rows of a table view or managing headers or that sort of thing. It's just these broad groups of functionality that you can use, and it gives you a sense for what things you can tweak and change and what things you can't. Mm-hmm. And of course that the methods exist then after that and where to go to find them.
Yeah, just having knowledge of, like, if, you know, 2 months down the road, you're trying to do some feature and you're like, I think there's a method to do this. Like, it's nice to be familiar with the documentation on that level. So let's talk about open source, because you have a somewhat unique sort of take on open source from what I can gather. Like, all of the work that you do at Mapbox is on GitHub, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, anything that's generally useful to other people, we open source. And so we don't sell software as a product per se. And so I've been doing open source stuff, again, since the 90s, since like I was in sysadmin. I would do bash scripts and Perl and PHP and that kind of stuff and use and consume open source software. But I've always been kind of had an eye towards it with Coco as well. And so nowadays what I get to do, luckily it's a pretty neat position, is work on developer tools at Mapbox that are open source and on GitHub. And then it helps in a couple different ways, because people can modify the source to their own needs, of course, but I can also get bug fixes from the community or feature requests that I wouldn't have thought of directly. Or when I'm working through a coding issue, I can actually send people I can show people the code or the ticket or issue around the bug or the functionality or something like that that has all the backstory to it. And that's all out there in the open. So it's kind of a neat way to work.
It sounds pretty interesting. So what do you have any tips or tricks for a beginner approaching open source? Like, is it something where they should just be reading, or should they try and contribute? Should they write their first application in the open? Like, what about some of the downsides of that? What do you think a beginner should do?
I hadn't thought about the idea of writing your first application in the open. I guess that's totally a valid way to do it. I guess at the outset, I would encourage anybody to experiment with putting code online. Don't be afraid of that, because I mean, it's kind of a fact that anybody who starts out in a new language or a new technology is not going to have the best code. And that's the whole point, is you're meant to improve and go forward from there. And I think it could be beneficial to have that online and learn from people who point out, hopefully constructively, how you might fix something or point out various areas of the code. So it could be a really cool way to learn, regardless of if it's an app you want to do something with later, or it's just kind of a learning experiment. I think other aspects of putting code online or open sourcing it. I'm definitely for it.
Like, what if someone is nervous about putting their work online because they're afraid that they'll get laughed at or otherwise, not greeted in the best receptive way? Like, how do you overcome that fear?
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know. I'm kind of particularly thick skinned about that sort of thing. So, granted, I wasn't putting a lot of stuff online when I was first starting out, but I definitely got, criticisms from people and mostly constructively, and it was a good way to learn. I mean, kind of an interesting thing about the way, this model that GitHub is paved in particular, and that a lot of open source communities are operating in now, is this idea of a meritocracy of adding code to a project. So say you're coming along to somebody else's project, this might be an interesting way to get started. You can help with documentation, but also you could possibly help with code. And it used to be, in the old open source model, you would have to kind of prove your worth up front to get commit access to the code by sending patches or whatever. And it was kind of unwieldy. And now you could find a project that you want to improve and fork it and commit the changes to your own version of it and kind of put it out there in a much easier way and be kind of welcomed into the fold. If it's a useful addition to the project or useful code or, a good bug fix or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I think the barrier to entry is a lot lower, and it's a good way to just take a stab at a project. I mean, the worst thing that can happen, if you find a project that's got good coders and generally friendly people, and you have a fix or an addition or something like that that you want to add to it, you can fork it, experiment with that, get it to work for yourself, submit a pull request to them. And the worst thing they can do is say, hey, this, you know, this isn't what we're looking for, or we don't really want it in the project because it doesn't meet what most users want, or something like that, and they'll close the pull request. But on the flip side, you might get it added to the project, and then you're a contributor to that project. And absolute worst case scenario, you've still got your fork of the project that does this thing that you wanted, and other people might be interested in that as well. So I think it's kind of a you can't lose. You know, just go into it with this idea that you know you don't have a lot to lose from it, and it's whatever happens is going to help you improve as a coder.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would encourage people to give it a shot.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you're still writing and reading code, which is a great way to start. I mean, just getting that experience is really really essential.
And yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I remember I was working early on in some projects, and they weren't very big, and I didn't have a sense of how big projects came together. And I checked out the source code to Aidium, the chat client, which is, yeah, it's kind of large.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of fascinating to see how all these parts work together and how a project with many targets, you know, why would you need multiple targets in an Xcode project? And what was that all about? And how did dependent targets work so that one target would build a couple other targets that it needed first? And there was a lot of code, and I definitely didn't get my head around it early on. But it was just interesting to see how a project of that size and complexity and that many people fit together, and it's something I could just check out on my own time and kind of explore it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did something similar when I first started kind of playing around with Cocoa, because I come at it from a Cocoa Touch perspective, so I know iOS, but coming to the Mac, when I wrote my first Mac app, I was like, what's going on? Like, it was almost being back at square one, because I knew the language, but I didn't really understand the frameworks.
Right.
So I checked out the iTerm source code, which is a similar thing where it's just like it's huge. It's got so many targets. I never really seen multiple targets before, and it was crazy.
Yeah, it can definitely be eye opening to get a sense of a big usable a big project used by a lot of people, how it's organized and how all the moving parts that go together with it.
Mm-hmm.
You brought up an interesting point of going from the iOS side to the Mac side. That could be kind of daunting because really, with iOS, they had the chance to rethink a lot of things from the ground up, and they did some other things for random reasons, like flip the Y coordinate in, all of your graphics. But there's other things too. Like just yesterday I was talking to somebody on IRC about this. They were working with Core Data on the Mac after a lot of experience with it on iOS. And by default, on iOS, Core Data doesn't have an undo manager. So you would have to set one if you want to have undo and redo actions related to Core Data. Mm-hmm. And on the Mac, it absolutely does have an undo manager by default. And that can affect your app because you might already be doing things with undo or redo in other parts of the app. And so now you've got multiple undo things. And it just got complicated very quick. And he's like a pretty accomplished iOS programmer, but he's like, why is this the opposite of the other platform? And so that can be tricky. And I would say probably a lot of folks would agree that the Mac is probably a little trickier to program than iOS. Just because some of the frameworks, they've been around longer, but they don't have as many conveniences built in. Mm-hmm. I'd say, but that's not to say it's unapproachable. There's still, it's easier in some other ways probably because you don't have the same kind of constraints. You can probably more easily distribute it to people if you want to have people check it out, because you don't have to go through an app store. You could just give them, a binary that you've built or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's a neat way to kind of get up and running and quickly get an app out to people to check out, whether that's by email or whatever.
Cool. So do you have any other tips or tricks or suggestions of your own that you'd like to tell our audience?
Trying to think. Going back a ways now, trying to think to when I was first learning. yeah, I'd say, so one thing I used to be more fond of than I am now is nibs or zibs or the graphical layout.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say that, it's definitely worth exploring and by extension, things like storyboarding on iOS, but it's also important to know how to do that stuff in code. And I think it might be, this is kind of maybe a bit of a subjective opinion, but it might be a bit easier to learn some of that stuff if you just do it in code, because I could see the possibility for getting bogged down a little bit in just the fiddly parts of working with, say, a zip file and trying to understand how it's changing and what's going on. I mean, on the one hand, it makes it easier because it's graphical, obviously. Mm-hmm. But you've got to connect things, and they can become disconnected, or you can forget to connect them and things like that. And if you do that in code, it's very easy to see. It's all right in front of you. Similarly, when you're dealing with like view sizes and putting views inside of other views, if you do that in code, I think it might better cement some of the concepts. So, So I guess I'm not saying like avoid zibs and storyboards and the graphical side of things, but kind of experiment with both sides of that, both the code and the visual mm-hmm. versions of it, and see kind of how they relate. These days, most of the stuff that I'm doing, I do in just all in code, because it's easier to just lay out and see in front of me, and I kind of prefer it for version control and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a less of a recommendation one way or another, and more of like a caveat emptor, buyer beware.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And that could be something where open source comes in, because there are lots of different applications that take different approaches, and you know, people can go check out that code and see how someone else has done it. I mean, my coworker and I, like, I prefer to do things in code. He prefers to do things in nibs. You know, there's no right or wrong way, but it's interesting to see how we sort of tackle it from both sides. So, I mean, having knowledge of both is definitely not a bad thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Well, that's everything I have to say. Is that everything you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I guess my recommendation is don't be afraid to stick stuff out there at open source and open source it. And particularly with things like GitHub Code Search, you could look for things that do or share functionality with something you might be working on to understand them better. There's just so much open source code nowadays to dive into to help you that you can tear apart. So definitely embrace open source community.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I actually have one more thing I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, sure.
Speaking of open source, are you familiar much with CocoaPods?
I am. Yeah. Okay. Do you want me to talk about it a bit, like as far as how it works or sure. my thoughts on it?
Yeah, both would be great.
I'm kind of a recent convert to it. My first impression of it was kind of more designed for folks who came from a Ruby background, and that's not necessarily the case. And I didn't come from a Ruby background, and so it took me a bit to approach it, but. I don't know where I got that impression from, but it's really pretty approachable. It's a great way to manage dependencies in a project. So, for example, if you are doing something with networking in your project and you want to use a library like, say, AF Networking, kind of the traditional route would be you would download AF Networking as a zip file or something like that and add it into your source code, and it would be kind of hard to manage and upgrade going forward. Or maybe the next step would be you'd add it as a submodule so that your Git project pointed a subdirectory of it pointed to AF Networking's Git project and could pull in a certain version of it. And that's got some issues too. And people have to remember to clone and pull all those things from the other sources. What CocoaPods lets you do is create a little text file in your project that's just got one line at the start that says what versions of Mac or iOS it works on. And then another line for each project that you want to include. So you would just add a line that would be like pod AF networking. And as long as it's a project that's in the CocoaPods, and there are hundreds of them, and most of the popular frameworks are in there, you can just run some simple command line tools like pod install, and it will pull those from all their various sources and build them and add them into your project really easily. So I'm really a fan of it. It's kind of the preferred install method for the SDK that I build now. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you can install it some other ways. You can do it as a dependent Xcode project, and then you've got dependent build targets and all this kind of stuff related to your app, and that could be kind of complex. And you can do it via binary install. We make a binary of it, even though it's open source, if you don't want to worry about the source, and that works okay. But if you want kind of the ease of install and the ability to edit the source, CocoaPods is a great way to do it. And you can kind of pin it as well to various versions. So if you have a certain version of a library you want to use, that goes on the line that indicates the library. So it would be pod, mapbox, and then a version number, or greater than equals to version number, to make sure they're using at least a certain version of it. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you just bring it in, you know, you import a header into your code and start using the library. So it's a really great way to manage dependencies and other projects that you might use. And it's nice if you're trying out libraries or just trying to figure out how they work, or if you want to use them when you're building out an app, because it's super low risk to just add a line for the library, run pod update, start using the code. If you don't like it, delete that line. The next time you run pod update, it removes it all from your project. And these can be hundreds of files sometimes, so it's really nice to have that managed automatically by one line in a text file.
Mm-hmm.
So big thumbs up to CocoaPods for me. I really like it.
Yeah, me too. I just love the not having to deal with the nitty-gritty of build settings and per-file compiler flags and stuff that gets in the way of coding. Like, it's almost work you have to do in order to do your work. So
yeah.
I don't really want to deal with all that.
Yeah, it's great. It kind of pushes that responsibility onto the developer of the library. I mean, they already had to have figured those things out, and generally they then relate those to you in their install instructions, and they're kind of monkey work that you have to go through, like you said, to get the thing to work. And it's nice because CocoaPods lets them specify all that in their pod definition, and then you don't have to worry about it. It's all brought in, all the compiler flags and all those kinds of settings, which honestly, that section of Xcode was really intimidating to me for a long time, until I figured out how to understand what changes were happening and see them in version control, which really helped me get my head around it. There, I was worried about touching something in the wrong place and messing up my project forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's nice because this minimizes some of that stuff. You really don't have to mess with a lot of that if you're using it. One of the only reasons you would have to early on is because you're bringing in other libraries and you need linker flags or header search paths or things like that. And CocoaPods kind of obsoletes that and takes care of those settings for you and gets them into your project without you having to mess with those settings.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd point out also that CocoaPods as an open source project is really nice. They're pretty approachable and they have a great mailing list. I still have questions when I'm working on various versions of our pods for our libraries. And I just wonder how to do something, and I kind of wonder out loud on the mailing list, and people are super helpful, either pointing out an example of another library that does that or just walking me through it on the mailing list. So it's also a neat example of an open source project.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. It's gotten to the point where if I want to use an open source library and they don't have a CocoaPod yet, I'll actually fork it and then create the pod for them, which can be a little tricky because I don't own the repository, so I can't create a tag for it. But everyone's super, super friendly. I mean, no one has come back to me and said, how dare you create a CocoaPod for my open source project?
Yeah. I've actually had somebody add one of our open source projects that we hadn't planned on putting in CocoaPods to CocoaPods.
Oh, boy.
and so one day I was searching for the pods that I'd put in there and found another one that kind of wondered how it got there. But yeah, it's neat because you can point. I've seen people do this also for some things like some of Google's libraries, where they distribute them. But they don't even distribute them as source, just as a zip file. But you can still build. You can make a pod spec that points to a zip file and grabs that and integrates it into a project. And so people have done that with some things. So it's one line to add these various libraries to your project as well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fun.
You can find Justin on Twitter at incanus77. That's incanus 77. This has been Springboard. If you've enjoyed the show, I would really appreciate it if you go to iTunes and rate the show there, because it'll help other people find the show and enjoy it too. Thanks again for listening, and have a great week.